Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, what's up?
Well, I'll tell you this. I read the preface of your book, and I also saw all the videos you sent me of your beautiful uncle there, Gregory Brown, overdosing.
Peter Brown, yeah.
Overdosing on heroin when the paramedics coming in. So, also, you, we were talking yesterday, I sent you our email exchange, our Facebook exchange.
Yes.
What do you make of it?
That it's sick shit that, you know, we had to listen to forever and ever. I mean, just that, you know, that's a more modern version of it with new words like Mason and stuff, but, I mean, it was always the same theme. Horrible, horrible, horrible. Go around town, anybody that would listen, which wasn't many people, because they weren't taking that seriously, but, you know, still, it did its damage. And, we were bad, awful, bad, 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 delinquent, and he was this wonderful golden boy, and it was, nothing could be for the exact opposite, and we were fine. Yeah, David had some, you know, brushes with bad boy thuggism when he was, you know, when we were in high school, but, you know, I mean, as a background check will show, that ever since then, he's A-okay. And me never, and Greg's stuff is disgustingly spoiled-looking, and Deborah's just hardcore thug bitch, you know?
So, yeah. You know, James, it's tricky for me, because I don't want to, you know, if you have a family dispute, I don't want to get that involved. But, I mean, what's the other tricky thing is, you know, is Sherry, you know, and you believe that Gregory was complicit in poisoning Sherry so that he can get inheritance. But you sending me a video of him strung out on heroin doesn't really prove that he was necessarily involved in a murder, you know?
Well, no, I don't have access to the current camera system. I never said it was that.
But I also read the preface of your book, and I understand your struggle with the Masons a little bit more, so... After you earned a position in the administration of the Scottish Rite, after you attained your 32nd degree, the Masons hired a thug to hop in your car and beat you up and have you drive him out of town. He was trying to drive you out of town, literally. He beat you up. He was holding you hostage in your own car. Making you drive.
Yeah, made me drive. Yeah.
Out of town.
Yeah.
What was his... Is that was his goal? He was trying to get you out of the city limits and then beat you up? Or what was the plan there?
Well, I don't know what his plan was. I didn't want to find out.
And you flung him against a guardrail after he jumped on your hood?
Yeah.
And you think he passed away?
No, I saw him in the rearview mirror stand up, but I think I was speeding away.
Oh, okay. And that's the first thing that really, it became dangerous, your relationship with the Scottish Rite. It wasn't just...
Yeah. I left and went up to our lake house for a bit.
Yeah. Is that the last time you, besides when we visited the Hollywood Lodge, is that the last, since that incident, you've had no contact with the, did you finish your Masonic career after that incident?
No, I've had constant fucking dealing. What are you talking about?
I haven't.
You're like, this is the first time we're talking on the phone. Why are you talking to me this way? What?
What? No, I just read the preface of your book. So,
no, not this. And Greg, it doesn't prove Greg. And I didn't tell you I was sending you stuff about that.
No, I know.
Why are you questioning me like I'm on fucking trial, dude?
I'm not. I'm just talking out loud here, you know. I don't want to be. It's very dangerous, you see, James, for me to be between this, you know. So I just want to be careful.
Oh, and how is that? How is that? They don't have any power.
I don't know.
Outside of this stupid-ass fucking hopeless, worthless city.
Just trying to ask questions, James. I don't want to get you riled up.
Okay, well, I mean, you know, you're coming here, so you can come over and take a good long fucking look if you want.
All right. How are things going with you and David in Dallas?
Well, how do you think? It's fucking abysmal. We had canned yams for fucking lunch because it was all we could find in this house. What do you want me to say? It's horrible. Because every little bit of anything I have and him, we're pulling together to keep ourselves eating, and meanwhile, we have to turn around and actually explain ourselves to some fucking horse shit from a bunch of drunk trust fund babies that are fucked up on heroin and everything else, talking like we're the problem. No, we're trying to fucking survive here. We're not on Mama's tit. Mama's Alzheimer's tit, okay? Never have been. This is the product of, like, they're trying to destroy him, shears out of the way, okay? It's crystal clear. This is not hard to vet, man. So, you know, I don't know what else people fucking want to look at. You want all our social security numbers so you can run your fucking background checks? Because I wouldn't have to say anything. And as far as how we are, I don't know. I don't know if we're going to survive this. Because, like I said, we ate canned yams. They're old, and I think from Walmart. So, what are you going to say about a situation like this? And they're keeping us locked in fucking turmoil and bullshit, and who do we turn to? The fucking cops who won't ever respond to anything going on with that house over there. Or anybody else that thinks, you know, we're just in with the mix of, like, fucking fucked up, spoiled rich kids. What sympathy do we deserve? Well, we've never benefited by that system over there. Don't you understand? We never had the trust fund. We never had. Dave and I have always been a little out-fucking cast because we were science projects that weren't really truly part of the family. And they know that. And they will not admit that. And, yeah.
I'm not trying to come with no attitude, James. I'm trying to tell you it's hard for me, too. And I'm trying to tell you what I'm
doing. Yeah, oh yeah, the whole fucking thing's hard. And let me tell you, you know, when it's rigged up with sick shit themes like this, in it, I mean, you know, here you go. You love a good Illuminati spooky story, so here you go. Here's one, in the flesh, family story, in the South, wealth, blah, 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 all of it, it's sick shit. Okay?
Yeah.
So, we are the ones that were treated like little pieces of property. And this is us fighting back so that, you know, there is a future. We have a roof over our heads right now because Sherry just had a house. So, none of them did. But Sherry was married to his father, who was a Bell sheriff, and they had a life, and he died, and you know, that was 10 years ago, and Sherry's died. So, here it is, and here we are. I'm already, like, high emotions here, running around paranoid of what the fuck is going on around us. So,
I hear you, James. I you know, personally, I don't want to be murdered is my main motivation. You know what I mean? So if I get a murderer...
Oh, because I'm so sure that, like, one of them is going to, like, what, take their mommy's credit card and, what, for gas so they can, like, get out there in L.A.? Come on. You're talking about worthless pieces of shit. And I don't like associating with that category of people, and I haven't in a very long time. I got the fuck away from them. Yeah. And I'm the freeloader, really? Okay. That's interesting. You know, I did have $250,000 trust fund. My mother stole that. It's not even really my mother, so that's why she did it. Ah! She didn't feel like I deserved it. I wasn't part of the family. So, you know, they should be asked questions like that. what is with this animosity? Oh, because Greg sits there to try to tell him born again Christian. This is all behavior from a born again Christian. So, if I'm the evil day one, then he should have plenty of redeemable qualities to state and back up a verifiable fact. I would like for someone to get a motherfucking background check done and shut the fuck up. That's my message to the world. Suck my dick. Run a background check.
Yeah, it's just a fight over trust funds and inheritances and houses and real estate.
It's great. Kind of... We don't want none of it. We want his shit to be straight, that he can dispose of this address properly, and then we book it out of town. We want to exit here ASAP. I would like to be back in LA in 1 month. Will that happen? I don't know. He's coming with me, and we're just going to do whatever and make it, you know?
All right, James, I didn't want to upset you. I'm going to finish your book, and then I'll call you back, and I just want to talk to you about your book.
Okay, yeah, I mean, you know, if...
So, you wrote a book, though, called Freemasonry, History of Cult and Abuses, and do you think that because of the title of that book and everything that you... It's, like, impossible for you to get a job in Dallas now because the million Freemasons that live... or in Dallas or around Texas are, you know, actively pissed off about...
Of course, my presence here, makes a lot of people stick to their stomach. So, that's definitely our family. Why is that? You know, no one's just stopping to ask that. Why is this sick, wealthy family and all these fucking sick, wealthy Masons the only people there that seem to be, like, irate that he's even there to begin with?
Right.
And whatever all went on in the past. I mean, come on. Hello? Like, Damien from The Omen? Wake up, man. Look at what's going on. It's right in front of your face. This is epic. And everybody wants to dance around it like the pink elephant in the room, and I'm really getting tired of that shit. So, it needs to be acknowledged for what it is, and people need to call it by its name, and or leave me alone or something, because this is not fucking easy.
So we recorded that episode a few months ago. I didn't feel like it was finished, so I called James back, and he seemed to change his story. Now he doesn't feel like Gregory and Deborah killed his Aunt Sherry. Now he feels as though his cousin has taken him for a ride. So apparently his cousin David that he was living with kind of had a escalating meth problem, escalating hooker problem, kind of built up this murder scenario in his head as to why he doesn't get the fucking inheritance. But it's really just because he's a meth addict, and, you know, if he would not be lazy enough to fill out, like, two pieces of paperwork, his life would be way better. So, anyway, I called James back, and I got some more details about his situation.
Hello.
James Wright.
Hey.
You sound better. You had bronchitis.
Yeah, well, I'm sounding a little better, but I'm still hacking and coughing. I didn't really sleep well last night because I kept coughing myself awake, so...
Well, I'm recording you. This is going to be Highway Diary episode 201, if you don't mind, you know. I also record a conversation.
Oh, good Lord.
I recorded a conversation earlier of you. This was, you know, maybe we talked 3 months ago, and you were kind of convinced that one side of the family murdered somebody in the family for inheritance, but now it seems like you were being taken for a ride.
Yeah, well, it's not the first time that a family member has completely manipulated me. So, you know, sort of par for the course in my life, unfortunately.
Do you want to get into any details about how you've been living? You know, you've been living with your cousin, and there was a... It's kind of like a trap house situation, right? There was a lot of drugs going in and out of the house. There was some hookers coming in and out of the house.
Well, that kind of covers it, yeah. I arrived there, and again, I was made to believe by him that this had to do with a certain roommate that was living with him, and that was the problem, and she had to go. And all of this, but no, I mean, no one's in control of that house except him, and it's really sad because it was like, I want to say 15 years ago that my aunt gave David's mom the money to completely gut and renovate that house and enlarge it and you know, go all out. And it was, when it was done, the place was absolutely beautiful, just spectacular, and it really stood out, especially in that neighborhood, which has always been, for a few decades now, kind of a lower, middle class to lower, upper lower class, you know, white, predominant, you know, working class, blue collar neighborhood. And now all this time later being back, obviously it's gone down even further. But it's just a shame to see a house that was made to be so beautiful completely torn up. It looks like they just missed one there.
So you went over to your old house?
Shirestone?
Yeah.
Yes, I was there day before yesterday, and I spent the night in one of the guest rooms. Yeah.
That was a house of horrors. You were partially raised in that house. You saw a lot of weird stuff. do you think that your cousin that you were living with has a heroin problem because he was made to be a super soldier and was in some kind of program?
I've been directly in the same small amount of square footage of his house with him now for 3 months, and I can tell you for 100% certainty that he doesn't have a heroin problem. He has a meth problem.
Okay.
Absolute. And I wouldn't say that it's scorching on the level of like he's smoking it every 30 minutes or hour or you know, like somebody who just does it all day long, but he does, for all intents and purposes right now, do it all day long, you know. But I would say maybe 6 hours or so in between sessions, if you will, because I mean, money's tight and he obviously can't afford to do more.
Yeah. So if he were to get inheritance, like let's say he was you know, he was right and he was making this story like they killed his mom and stole the inheritance away from him, is it possible that the other side of the family's keeping the inheritance away from him because he's going to put it in his veins or up his nose or whatever as soon as he gets his hands?
Well, I think there's two things that I should say here that'll probably explain all of the of any questions that could possibly be related to that one as well as that question. One, I should say that I must confess that I was trying my best after I'd been there about a month and started to see sort of the truth about his behavior. I was trying to shield and protect that because I wanted to, in my opinion, get him into a situation where I could because we had talked, and he had said, you know, like, he wanted me to power of attorney over him and so on. So I started thinking that I could manage getting him into a rehab, get him out to California, get him away from the influences of the hood out there in East Dallas, and the sort of peer pressure, which he's always been vulnerable, going back to when we were kids, the peer pressure, he just doesn't know how to say that. And, you know, which that was the slogan when we were kids, was just say no. Remember? So there was that. And obviously I'm completely incapable of that. I tried. It's with his personality and his attitude, it's not possible. And then two, whether it's the murder accusations or that the drug use or whatever, or the money situation presently, the future hypothetical future money situation, whatever, all of these things, he kept saying, well, the proof, in other words, of what he's saying, his allegation, the proof has been Shirestone, but we're both blocked from accessing that house. Okay. Well, I've now been there, and I have now examined the inner sanctum of Shirestone in that house, and all this evidence that he says is sitting there, it's not there. And that doesn't, and that's not to say, like, ooh, spooky, spooky. No, literally, I know what to look for. I was allowed to look, and he's either full of crap, or he's completely mentally delusional, or maybe a combination of both. I'm not a psychiatrist, so I can't really serve a diagnosis of that. But from what I've seen, he is still absolutely cared for in a trust provision as trickled down through his mother, from his mother's mother, and that will be managed by the CPAs and so forth entities that manage that, and he is taken care of in that regard. He, because that was one of his first allegations, it was that, that was when I was still in Los Angeles, and he was calling me, saying, you know, they're cutting me off, blah, blah, blah. And I was very concerned because my past with my family, I know that they can employ some tactics like that if they choose to, but that's not what's happening. They haven't done that. They do not plan on doing that. Everything is pretty much sealed and signed, and with the various attorneys and, you know, banker types and so forth. So, David is, of course, you know, provided for. If it's something that he could live a lavish millionaire's type of life off of, I do not think so. No. He will be taken care of, but, you know, going to basically cover his cost of living in a normal, everyday people sense, so that he can live as long as he can, as secure as he can, because it's their opinion and my opinion as well. Well, actually, it's not like my fresh opinion. I've had this opinion the whole time, because that's why I came to John to help him, that he's not capable of taking care of himself. And, you know, honestly, I mean, this is sort of like getting into, like, some family dirty laundry here, but I blame that on his mother. His mother definitely pampered him and babied him, and you see the result of that now in a 36-year-old man who does not understand what bills are, what a bank account is, what IRS and taxes are, etc. He has no comprehension of it.
Yeah, so he just gets a check for what seems like $2,700 every month, and his rent is paid through accountants, and he every now and then can go to the money machine and take out money for methamphetamines and blowjobs. And outside of that, he has really no skills, no understanding that other people work, or, you know, everyone's inconvenient to him. If he's not, if people aren't serving him fast enough, he gets really annoyed.
That is all correct, although I would not say it's a large, as large a number as $2,700 a month. I was reworking his accounting as it stands now, because remember, his grandmother is very much so alive, and that trust situation I just described, that is in the future tense. That's something that will play out in the future when its natural time comes, you know, God,
right.
God forbid, you know, and all that. And, in the meantime, the little bit that he is getting from his mother, like a paid for, her house paid for, valued at $200,000, her retirement benefits from her job and so forth, we're not talking about a lot of money here. And I was trying to do the accounting on it myself in such a way where he could be set up in sort of a microcosm version of what he will be set up with in the future, so that he can start living with, you know, income, a supplemental income today. But in the process of doing that, he was nothing but volatile and difficult and arrogant and all of that. And, like, for example, ever since we were, like, I think we were in fourth grade, and he was diagnosed with some mental disabilities, like one of which is dyslexia. And he, or no, I'm sorry, dyscalculia. And, you know, so he has difficulty with forms and things like that. Okay, well, that's nothing to be ashamed of. And you know, somebody who has that disability definitely deserves help. Well, okay, with the disability, he gets an SSI check. We're only talking about $400 a month, but when you do the accounting and you figure that into what else you could set him up to be receiving every month, my estimate was that he could at least be seeing somewhere in the neighborhood of, after settling the house and putting the money from the sale of that back into the larger pool and everything, I was hoping to see a situation where he could maybe be seeing about $1,500 a month. Now, but like with the SSI, the check is currently cut off because his mother, who is now deceased, was his signatory, and the check will be turned right back on, but he has to go to the office and have somebody else sign up as his signatory. I was going to do that. He wanted me to do that, but every single day, let's go to the office this morning, and he didn't want to, and there was nothing but a bad attitude about it. He would have rather sat there and done bad activities rather than good, productive, forward-moving activities. And the longer I've been here and been dealing with him, the more and more frustrating it's been. And I was able to get some other things done that I didn't need his input for, but at the same time, these other things like that, something very fundamental, important like that, I cannot get him to do. And then the subject of, like, you know, we're going to have to open you some bank account. No, I can exist with cash. No, you can't. I know you can't. You hand it to your hoe. You know, I just, the whole thing got to be so ridiculous that it was like, okay, so, you know, we had a fight, and I stepped out for a couple days and went back with a clear head, And, you know, he seemed kind of remorseful, and we talked, and he promised to stop behaving like such an ass and allow me to do what I was there to do. But again, within a week, he was already backtracking on that, and that's just when everything started to quickly deteriorate, and I said, all right, you know, I'm going to get you this money in, and then we're done. And then I'll return to L.A., and you can... you can do what you want. And then it got worse and worse, and resulting in where we are now. And where we are now is, he crossed a line that for me is a point of no return. I was run so ragged by all this that I became sick like this. I don't get sick like this. Are you kidding? I mean, this is like, elderly people are sick, like I am sick right now, but that's how I feel. I've been run so ragged, and I'm sick in a bed, in a room, in his house, and he comes in there and yanks me out of bed, this sick, by my shirt, shoves me to the wall, and points a loaded shotgun at my face, demanding that I am not to go get him cereal, and that I'm not moving quick enough for his need for cereal. And it's so stupid and so offensive and so ridiculous that, you know, I did leave. But I don't know what he was expecting to happen next, but what's happening next is I'm through. And I don't just mean I'm through with the situation. I'm through with him. I don't know who he is anymore. Who he is disgusts me. And it was very heartbreaking for me because, I mean, we were so close. So close. For so long. I mean, ever since day one. And in a lot of ways, he's almost more like a twin brother. But that's over because he has turned himself into something so foul and so negative and repulsive that there's nothing I have left for it. You know, he is dead to me. And I hate to say that, but that just is the way it is. Unfortunately, and I guess I'll catch
them
in the next life.
You know what I'm just thinking of? It just is your relationship with your cousin here. It just ran a similar course to your relationship with the Freemasons. It's like you pour your life into trying to, you're working 14 hours a day in the Scottish Rite building. You're getting harassed, you're getting gay bashed, all you ask is that stops, and then you're basically ran out of there and threatened to, and the grand wizard, inspector, pedophile comes down from Washington and tries to scold you, and they send some weirdo out to beat you up and try to kill you, try to get you ensnared in some bizarre situation. You have to throw a guy against a guardrail and drive away. And then this, it's like you're trying to get the house of your cousin in order, and then he pulls a gun on you, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had not actually thought of it along those lines, but you're right. Yeah, it does mirror that, and I guess I'll throw you one better. You know, we have that element in common. This is another reason why I felt the urgency to come to town and help him, because he was telling me things and these things have actually turned out to be true, that he was saying, you know, I'm being targeted by the Masons and blah, blah, blah. And I've done my homework on that. I've checked out the leads he gave me, and they have proven to be true. And it is, you know, not that far-fetched to put forth this statement that the Dallas Scottish Rite, and greater, the D.C. Supreme Council Scottish Rite, Masons, definitely have a heightened interest in the boys in my family. There's a lot of reasons for that.
Please go into all those reasons. That's what I'm interested in. What are the reasons why? Why would the Dallas Scottish Rite and the Scottish Rite of Washington, D.C., the two jurisdictions which are able to confer 33rd degrees, be so interested in some, you know, guy in with learning disabilities in a flop house in Dallas suburbs. What is so interesting about this guy to them?
Well, him specifically, he has one line in particular. His father was arguably one of the top Dallas Sheriff SWAT team members that ever was. I mean, the guy was just really, really good at his job and very decorated and admired as such. And that combined with what his mother had in her, which his mother was adopted, but I've done research into where her origins are, and her bloodline comes down to Valois, which is, you know, the French royalty, Catherine the Great, that family. So she's a descendant of that. So you're fusing Valois with, you know, this sort of soldier type of father DNA. And so the result is you have a sort of a super soldier. And I mean, everybody that knows that he never visits a gym. He doesn't work out in any way. And yet he has this strength that is just jaw dropping. I mean, I've seen him lift a car off the ground to have, you know, a buddy help him change tire. It's crazy. And that makes him, with his state of mind and the drug abuse and everything, quite dangerous. And, you know, that's what worries me about that situation.
He was adopted? You said he was adopted?
No. His mother was.
Oh, okay.
Yes. But that comes from where my... That's the connecting side into my family, and it's very complicated. You could describe us as old aristocratic Texas intermarrying families, kind of, you know, not like, oh, not suggesting anything like redneck or anything. No, not that at all. Just, you've got these historical Texas families that have always been very close, and the environment that we grew up in is sort of the product of that. And, like, because he and I don't actually share direct blood, but we are, of course, on paper, traceable as relatives. This is this weird world of genealogy where things start to get kind of shadowy and all that. And then, of course, you know, for him, his great-grandfather would have been a former chairman of the Dallas Scottish Rite at a time when that environment, that building, that place in Dallas for it was being built up. And he was instrumental in its expansion. And obviously with him, I mean, I can't answer to that because I wasn't alive. I don't know what was going on in the building while he was there. But I think it's pretty obvious that the other men around him in that environment in that time would have obviously observed things that they could then, you know, have that knowledge to pull from later on, you know, decades and decades later, from their little information bank. And
was Grandpappy Mason really good at summoning ghosts? And so they're like, wow, this guy's got the same bloodline of that.
I have no idea. I have no idea what all he did. The only thing I know for a fact that his great grandfather did. He used his broadcast studios to produce the music that was used in the Scottish Rite degrees. That I know for a fact because I've seen the old vinyl records when I worked in the building. Beyond that, the records were sealed, even the vaulted ones, which I had access to.
So I heard recently that Stanley Kubrick, he showed the full version of Eyes Wide Shut to the producers. He was murdered, then they cut out 24 minutes, then the producers put out Eyes Wide Shut.
Yes. You only heard that recently. I mean, that's
what did they cut out?
I'm told from someone, I can't name their name, in that Hollywood world that I've met, that it had to do with, if you notice at the end, it cuts to, anybody can just go to black in that toy store.
Right.
I was told that it had something to do with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman's character, their daughter. She starts wandering off from them toward two sort of dark, spook-looking men who may or may not have been featured in one of the, not the risque orgy scene, but
right.
That toward the beginning of the movie, the party, you know, the elegant party that he went to, and that, and that she was basically sort of being offered up to them by Tom Cruise as a sort of entrance payment to join the Illuminati, if you will, or whatever, you know, the secret society in the movie.
So you can join, but you have to give up your daughter to creeps.
Well, in other words, it was supposed to highlight how a lot of these elite families will volunteer a child for some role in that.
So, you know, what's so fascinating, I read your book, you know, and one of the biggest things that stood out to me was the ceremonies itself, you know. You really gave a tremendous picture of what it's like to rise from a master mason to a first through 32nd degree mason by participating and watching what are plays, what are, like, put on productions, a play, where everyone plays a role in these mysteries, or you're just watching this play unfold while feasting on salmon and asparagus and nice wine and everything's kind of cozy, but you're watching a play, essentially. That was the biggest thing, where it's like,
yes.
Yeah.
Anything with a background in entertainment or theater or whatever, that's the best way to describe it is, those rituals and degrees are basically structured, each one in the form of like a one act play. Yes.
Hmm. Now, did you feel that something was happening to your body while watching this play, or there was some kind of convergence of demons that entered your mind and could whisper you psychic secrets? What were these plays? What happened?
Well, I mean, there is absolutely a sense of otherworldly energy, I guess I'll say it, call it, in the room when these things are underway. Now, on a side note, it might be interesting to note that my date of initiation was preset on May the 1st, a.k.a. Beltane. So why would they hit that? You know, because there's always this occult underlying magical tone playing out with it, and they will deny that. I have a theory that I guess I'd like to put forth. I strongly believe that whatever is happening there, I think that if you are, this might sound strange, but I don't know how else to word it, if you are meant to be part of that and in that room
and so on, then whatever happens, you walk away from not affected negatively. But if you are not meant to be in that room, and when I say meant or not meant, what I'm referring to specifically is like your genealogy, your DNA. If you're not meant to be in that place, that remember, this comes from the Knights Templar and that sort of thing. So if you're not of that sort of gene pool that those Templars would have been, because remember, magic is, or magic traditions, I should say, are related to specific races. For example, you can't be a medicine man unless you're 100% Cherokee, right? So, it's the same thing with this. And if you are not of this sort of genome, and you go clawing your way into a locked room, and you're really not supposed to be playing with stuff, then I think something very dark goes into you. I absolutely do. Because, I mean, just Google pictures of Freemason. You never see him smiling. You never see him... they always have that Mason sort of scowl going on, you know, on their face and all that. And there's a reason why, because there's something very dark inside of them. And I would say my best guess is the turning point is the Master Mason ritual, because it's that ritual where you're going to the death and rebirth thing. And when you are lifted up, reborn, you definitely are changed a bit. And you're either changed the way that you're supposed to be, the way that I believe happened to me, and that you're sort of enlightened, or maybe some sort of senses or whatever precognitive talents or whatever are heightened, or you come up out of it a total asshole, basically. And obviously there's more jerks than wonderful little Masons running around. Well, of course, because it isn't supposed to be something with millions and millions and millions of members. And because, again, back to, if it's a genome, okay, well, exactly how many people of this sort of Merovingian, Sicambrian, Frank bloodline are there running around? Well, not millions and millions and millions. So, and then the Scottish Rite, as I said a million times, you know, there's an agenda there from the Supreme Council down that wants to throw all of the Templar material and the bloodline material into the garbage can, at least for most Masons.
So the Templar,
the rest, sure, yeah, they are feverishly chasing that stuff down behind the scenes on the top level.
So you're saying that the reason for this is to appear to be a more inclusive society. So what you're saying is the Templar material follows the lineage and the bloodline of all the great magicians. And if you're not of that bloodline, there's no way for you to ascend. But you also said something interesting, like if you're some kind of rainforest shaman and you understand that culture, the magic person, the medicine man of the town has to be of that bloodline to unlock the specific magic that he's trying to invoke, just like very inbred British nobility royalty types. They are the ones that unlock the mysteries of the Templar. Like, only if they have that vibration in their DNA do these rituals really speak to them. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I'll even go so far as to give it a name. We're talking here about dragon magic. You're talking about the dragon bloodline and the dragon magic, and that is a very real thing. You just don't hear about it a lot in mainstream history books because it's, I guess, viewed as very dangerous by the powers that be, because the powers that be are that, and they definitely don't want, well, not all of them, but your royal powers that be have that, and they definitely don't like people potentially finding out what makes them tick.
So, can I ask you about just a real quick follow-up question? Like, how do I do some dope, like, dragon magic?
Well, for that, I must recommend, you know, I was blessed in that I had the most wonderful mentor that anybody could have ever hoped to in Prince Nicholas Devere. So, if you want to look up his book, The Dragon Legacy, or you can find it. There was a free version that he did as an ebook. When the internet was just coming about, I think he's probably the first man to ever do an ebook, actually. In the title of that titled as From Transylvania to Tunbridge Wells, but it's the same book. So you can find the free ebook of that, or you can store or order online the hard copy of The Dragon Legacy. It's a wonderful read. It's a long, technical read, but it's a wonderful read.
Now, I just want you to tease the audience a little bit. What is some example of some guy pulling off in the public view, right in front of everybody, some dragon magic, and we need to know that person was a dragon magician? You know? What are some telltale signs you're in the presence of someone doing some dragon magic?
Yeah. Excuse me. One moment. Another coughing stick coming up. I hope you edit all that out.
Yeah, you're divulging secrets. I'll edit that out for you.
The hacking and coughing is quite embarrassing anyway.
Well, I don't want to...
I'm sorry, repeat the question.
Repeat the question. I'm just trying to get you to tease some dragon magic. What's a little tease of dragon magic, Templar style, that, Any general tenets of the magical system that you can give? So we can get a preview.
Well, you heard a remote viewing.
Okay.
We're quite seasoned with that. I understand that our lovely, friendly Defense Department put certain people through many, 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 many hours of training just to get a sort of a mediocre skill of it going, but with us, it's sort of training required, and then I'm sure other people might have heard things like Starfire. That's a dragon tradition. Because the whole thing about being a dragon is to know. Dragons just know. That is why we're very good at reading people or predicting the outcome of an event and things like finding lost objects, things like that, where we just do it just messing. And for people might have seen The Men Who Scare Goats. Well, that's a true story, and based on a true story. And you're talking about Project Stargate and Sub-Project Jedi, and when our Defense Department spends many, many black budget dollars to harness that, you better believe that it's something very real and very, very valuable.
So is that why the...
For the purposes of...
Yeah. the secret societies and the Defense Department seem to have a lot in common. They have different, like, security levels, top secret, super top secret, so much compartmentalization of information. And so you're saying that ever since what seemed like the Thule Society, the Nazi party that came over, that occult systems were big parts of the Defense Department's black budget.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's when they began with the OSS establishing these projects like Stargate and Jedi and so on. Yeah.
Trying to make superhumans using this ancient knowledge.
Yes. Well, there's a problem because they can sure make them, can't they? I'm a result of that. But they can't exactly control it, because if you make one and it has that, it makes it all the more difficult to control. And that's a problem for them. And I'm not so sure that they get very frustrated because, you know, they bring in their own people and train them as best they can, but those people can only go so far with it. And then, you know, they even have use those people to pursue us, you know, of this type, if we're non-compliant, but we can always outwit them around every turn. And they don't like that because, you know, you're talking about people who are very used to getting what they want and not hearing the word no and not having to report back a failure on a mission. And when they jack with us, they never leave with what they were told to go get.
So you're saying that if you're in a bureaucratic system, even a bureaucratic system in a secret society, someone with precognition is hard to politically blackmail to sabotage the career of to get a promotion ahead of. Is that what you're saying?
Well, what I'm saying is that you can, of course, sabotage one of us. You can mess up our lives pretty bad. You can kill us, I guess. But trying to employ dark tactics to coerce us is impossible. It's totally impossible. And not only that, a lot of times there is some sort of unseen force kind of guiding it all that has a tendency to backfire at people who do it like that. And to me, this is highly ironic and hilarious because my attitude is kind of like, you know, I've been taken out and wined and dined at a five-star restaurant by these Defense Department jerks who, you know, they had no choice because they couldn't get answers to questions they had that they knew I had answers for, again, revolving around the subject matter of, say, genealogy and what I might have learned from one Mr. Desir, things like that. And the only way to actually get their damn answers with the most seasoned remote viewers who, you know, maybe some names you can research there, like Robert Smith and Joseph McConnell, the Hostess, yeah. And they have to go as far as actually, all right, let's go sit at a table and talk, oh, you little bastard, type of situation, because even with all their training and all their, ooh, I mean, such a good remote viewer and blah, 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 they can't outwit us. They can't outwit me. They can't outwit my, call them peers from that environment, that classroom, so to speak. And too bad. So I say ironic because it's like, you know, how much are you paying these people? Because if you want the real deal, you know we're it. And yet, here I sit broke. You know, I mean, I would take a job like that. I would take some Defense Department job to go sit in an office somewhere for blah, blah, and remote view crap all day. Yeah, sure. So why do the paychecks always go to the trash and not to the real deal?
Well,
that's why I think it's ironic.
You're hitting something that's really interesting today. You know, an Army recruiter called me today. You know that?
Really?
Yeah. He goes...
And what did he say? Boobity-boobity-boo?
He said, hey, I realize you have a lot of student debt. You know what I mean? Well, you got your master's degree. That's interesting. Hey, look, we don't have screenwriting in the Army, but if you join the Army, you can run our newspaper. You know what I mean? It's like, we have a newspaper. There's journalists in the Army. You know, you could be a part of our propaganda department. So I was like,
most news is propaganda.
So that's an interesting offer. And then he said something interesting, too. I was like, oh, I'm 32, you know? He's like, as long as you're not 34, you can't join the Army at 34. You have to be 33 or below. Isn't that interesting?
Well, then I guess I missed my window. I'm 36.
You missed your window, but, you know, that's just the Army. I'm sure the remote viewers have a different category, you know? Who knows? You got to find what agency...
Well, I mean...
runs the remote viewing program.
Well, that's for you to decide. Let's say you did that. I wouldn't judge you for that. You actually can maybe do something really great with that. I can turn out to be a wonderful thing. You know, let's say they came to me and said, all right, we give in, we'll hire you, report here and remote view this and blah, blah. Okay, sure. But see, here's the thing. Why they would like very much to be able to control it, you know, from the petri dish on, is this can be weaponized. It can be weaponized. And, again, those of us who have this whole 100% dragon thing going on, we also have this whole 100% free will thing going on. So for that to happen... you'd have to, the individual, be willing to take that step over the dark side and be willing to let them use you for that in a weaponized purpose. Now, would I be willing to do that? I don't know. That depends. If it was for a good cause, like, go America, we're fighting whatever, the commies, whatever the threat of terrorism, sure. Absolutely. I'd be a good little soldier for Oxentry, but if it's to start running hit jobs on, you know, taking out good people or something, no, absolutely not. The hell do you people think I am?
So what you're telling me is that the royal family has a certain kind of bloodline. We all know that, the Windsors, you know, the Queen Elizabeth, she has the right to rule because she has the perfect bloodline. You're saying that according to... Templar lore, the people with that bloodline have the biggest level of dragon power, dragon energy magic, so that this can be weaponized by taking eggs out of different royal members' families, petri dishing, using their DNA to create a super soldier, then to train them in the arts of the Templars and to kind of super soldier with the perfect blood, see if, you know, these mysteries are correct and try to make a super dragon power soldier. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's precisely what I'm saying. After all, why do you think the Knights Templar were unbeatable? They conquered Jerusalem. Twice. Do you think there wasn't anything weird going on behind the scenes with that?
So they would do these certain rituals before battle that they felt made them indestructible in the army. So they just have a helmet with a sword. But before they go out there, they're going to drink some blood and semen and get some starfire going, a little whiskey. And then they go out. Because if you'll do that, then you'll do anything on the battlefield, right? So... it just makes you...
Right. They also would employ, you know, the use of smoking hash, to feel further invincible. They did all sorts of things.
Yeah, but we don't do that.
Well, it's important to note that you can do all those things, but I agree with the viewpoint of my mentor Nick that if you are this and if you're a dragon, you don't exactly have to pick up some sort of book of magic and do some little hocus pocus ooga booga ritual or spell to accomplish what you're trying to do. Now, you can do those things, yeah. It can enhance it, I guess. Or if you're a creature of habit and you just love ritual that much, sure, whatever, knock yourself out. But it's not mandatory, you know, because what this is, we are vessels that channel a certain energy flowing through the universe. It's the energy of the dragon. And when it's needed, it can immediately, right there on the spot, no ritual necessary. You know, I would liken it to, like, you know, when they went back and did the old Star Wars prequels and you got Yoda fighting and all that, okay? And then he's, like, fighting and then it's over and he's right back to hunched over and with his cane and all that. Yeah, it's kind of like that, you know? Like, if you need it and you're in the moment and that adrenaline fires your navel chakra and it starts, it's on. And it's on for as long as you need it.
Have there been ever an athlete or, I would think a UFC fighter who employs these rituals before they perform? Are there a lot of, maybe even a baseball player, maybe Bruce Jenner? Who knows?
Oh, I'm sure there has been. I mean, I don't know of any off the top of my head. I must confess that I don't really follow any kind of sports. Never have. The only sport I've ever followed is swimming because I was a swimmer and. I mean, I suppose in a way, like, I really loved doing the relays because it was this short but rapid setup, you know, team relays. And so, you know, getting in that zone and, like, having a burst of energy and then just running crazy. I mean, yeah, I was great with that kind of thing. So I would think that, yeah, there are. And maybe there's some who are who don't know it. And it's just flowing naturally. And then there's maybe some who are employing the use of rituals and things like that. But I wouldn't be able to show you any names. I don't know on a case by case basis of anything. I've never heard of anything. I've never sat. I never looked. So, but yeah, that's totally possible.
So you're saying at the end of Eyes Wide Shut, Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman give up their daughter as an entrance fee and they both join the Illuminati. And then these evil men, they go take her in the back and murder her for a ritual in order to get more powerful in the club.
Well, I think it's safe to say that, you know, if you look at Tom Cruise's behavior throughout the progression of the movie, obviously, he's so intrigued by what he is seeing that it takes him all the way to sneak into that house. It takes him all the way to keep, you know, checking with those people despite their warnings, like, you know, stay away, you haven't been invited. And he wants to belong to it very badly, obviously. And he also seems to have no problem with that guy, the character that he rents the costume from, who he clearly sees tipping out his underage daughter. And he walks away from that with no moral compass kicking in and saying, like, you know, if that was me, I would walk out there and run to a safe place, pull out my cell phone, call 911. You know, oh my God, I just saw the guy and he's tipping out his daughter. send the cavalry, you know, but he doesn't do that, his character. So, yeah, that's where the movie was going. It would have concluded in him joining and them profiling on screen how these elite families give up a kid in most cases.
What do you think happened with Anthony Bourdain? Was his girlfriend in the Illuminati, she pointed out, named Harvey Weinstein as someone who raped her at Cannes, that this was his hunting ground?
In 1997, I was raped by Harvey Weinstein here at Cannes. I was 21 years old. This festival was his hunting ground. Sitting among you, there are those who still have to be held accountable for their conduct against women, for a behavior that does not belong in this industry, does not belong in any industry or workplace.
It seemed like Anthony Bourdain was sort of getting woke to some of the cabal's motives, the cabal's intentions. And he had creative control on his show, you know. He just talked with Elon Musk.
Probably. Yeah, I don't know enough about it because the past 3 months I've kind of been in a news and information hole dealing with this crap with my cousin. But what I do know about it is, regardless of the name of Anthony or whoever it may be, it seems to me that a lot of times you see, like, a celebrity-type character, they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then they somehow encounter this world, and they start freaking out and speaking out, and that's when you see them get whacked. And
so do you think that he was, like, offered what Tom Cruise was offered in Eyes Wide Shut, and he went he knew too much and he went the other way? We're just talking here.
I don't know. I mean, I really don't honestly know. I'm going to go with I don't know. I really don't know. It would be stupid just to hear and speculate.
No, you're not speculating. You're not speculating at all. You're using your dragon powers that you were bestowed upon through watching mystery plays.
Okay, all right. Speculate, here we go. Okay, as far as you say an Eyes Wide Shut type scenario, I don't think it would have been that, because that environment, you got to be so aristocratic or so high up in that food chain, because remember, it's all hierarchical. And I don't think that Mr. Anthony Bourdain was that that genetically that, or I don't know what I'm even trying to say. I don't think that he was a product of an elite environment from birth or married into one. You know, whatever. I think that his celebrity exposed him to those environments where he probably learned things or saw things or whatever, and that is the most likely scenario there of what's playing out with him, is he saw too much, he knew too much, heard too much, whatever, and I guess someone somewhere determined that that was a problem.
Ay, ay, ay. And that's the big deal, is creative control. Just like Stanley Kubrick had creative control, so the studio said, oh, well, we saw a rough cut of his movie, so then we cut out 24 minutes due to editing reasons. But the guy who has creative control is dead. They own their movie. They paid for it. So the studio execs took his footage and cut it down to something that the dumb surface monkeys have clearance to watch. You know? They're not to be led into They're not to be let into. Yeah, we can't tell the profane what we're up to.
Well, and that, and then they just, most people that see that movie, I mean, I remember because it came out when I was in high school, so, you know, we all went and saw it in the theater, and everybody kind of, I just remember my friends and the other people that I've ever seen or heard, oh, I saw it, I seem to come away from it thinking, oh, well, that was just some smutty movie about some cult and Tom Cruise wandered into their craft and they're just a bunch of sex addicts or whatever. Well, yeah, after it was cut, it's kind of how it looks, unless, you know, you have more of a trained and knowledgeable eye and you can see all the occult and secret society elements playing out there. But yeah, no, I believe that he was trying to do a full expose on this world, and he would have certainly access to it. And it's also interesting to note that I believe Nicole Kidman comes from that world too. If you look into what happened with her father. Have you ever heard about all that?
Yeah, I was just watching a little bit of it today. Wasn't he accused of being a high-level, pedophile, human trafficker or something like that, an MK-Ultra handler?
Accused, yes, but the fact remains that he did have all bright ties and links to the other people associated with, like, that elite ring over in Australia. Yes. Yes, so you see, this does go on. That's very likely how she, I love Nicole Kidman as an actress, and I really like her body of work, her filmography, but it's likely that that's probably how she got in Hollywood. I don't know that for certain. It's just very probable.
When her dad is... pedophile who's also in these secret societies and has a daughter, maybe she just paid that price and went, okay, cool, I get to be a movie star, I'll pay that price, you know.
I suppose some people do look at it that go into it. Yeah,
it's a business expense.
Yeah, I mean, because that's where all money, power, prestige, those are very tempting things, of course. So I think a lot of people who might have some morals be very quick to throw those out the window when they're offered that stuff. I know for a fact a lot of Masons do. I've seen all kinds of Masons throw away their beliefs and their scruples, you know, for that 33rd or whatever.
So, you're in an interesting situation now. You're trying to get back to Los Angeles. You just kind of got out of. If you were to precog what the next 6 months of your life is going to look, what's going on?
Well, actually, I've said this a million times before to people. I don't know. I guess for some others is different. We're all like snowflakes. No two are the same type of thing. For me, I've never been able to look at my own circumstances because I can't see that. And not only that, the closer I am to someone, the more I know them, the less I can read them. But a total stranger, I can read 100% like a book. And maybe a casual acquaintance, you know, I can read maybe 60 to 80%. But myself, oh no, 0%. And I wish it wasn't that way. I really do. Maybe my life would have been easier. But I don't know. I really don't know. So, it sucks. I don't know. I'm freak out, you know.
Should you call the army and try to get in a remote viewing program? Men Who Stare at Goat style?
Well, they know where I am. I've been to dinner with these people in Los Angeles. They you know, requested I join them, and I accepted the invitation. And we did that damn thing. So they know who I am. They've known for a long time. They know how to find me. I suppose if they would call and offer up that job, we can talk. Because I definitely need some form of stable income and all that, you know. I'm sitting here in a hotel room in Dallas, broken and ruined again because of the crap I just went through with that damn cousin of mine. And, you know, my family was at least gracious enough to put me in this hotel room, but after this week, the length it is paid for, I don't know what's going to happen. To the best of my knowledge, I will be sitting out on the curb out here on the side of the freeway with my suitcases because I don't know. I know that I need to get back to L.A. because that is my home. That's where I do the work I get to do when the work is available. And my network and professional contacts and everything. And I at least know that, you know, if I'm there, I have a much better chance of survival and getting back on my feet because here, yeah, right, there's nothing I can, that I have a background or a resume in that can be used here. And there's no resources for the downtrodden here. You know, we're talking about a conservative evangelical state that unless you're rich, as far as they're concerned, you can go dive off a cliff. So, yeah, I need to get out of here. So I may have to hitchhike back to L.A. I don't know. Either which way, when I get there, to the best of my knowledge, I will be sitting on the side of the road with my suitcase. I don't know. I have no options in front of me and currently as we speak, and no one's offering to help me help solve my problems. And as a matter of fact, no one ever has. I've had some people come along and maybe give me little boost steps, you know, little stepping stones and things like that, but no one's ever just come into my life and said, like, damn, this really sucks, you poor thing. I'd really like to help you out and here and just sort of like give me that foundation of an actual, you know, restart or whatever. I don't know. Hey, did I do that for people? I came here with nothing to help him and look what it got me. And it's just frustrating. It's frustrating because since I was 17, I've been thrown in the trash twice by relatives, like I was just not worth even looking at, and once by the Masons. And, you know, that's done its damage psychologically. I'm always paranoid about people throwing me in the trash, and I don't understand why, because I'm not a bad person. I don't go around hurting people. I don't go around enacting little nefarious agendas or anything like that. Matter of fact, I run screaming from those type of people. And with the work I've done, that book, it was a bestseller for 4 years on Amazon and the category it was in. I should have money. I should have something to show for all the stuff I've been through and done. And yet I don't. I have 2 suitcases and a backpack, and that's it. Because whenever it's right there within reach, someone comes along and snatches it away, and it's really sad.
Do you think that these mystery plays, they somehow could curse you. Like, if you leave the organization, you're cursed by it or something. As long, like, do you think that if you never complained about, you know, the kind of gay bashing and harassment that you were undertaking, if you just took it and took it and took it and kept showing to work, do you think that you would be...
I can quickly and easily answer. I know what the rest of that's going to be, and the answer is no. Because when I was inside that net and enjoyed the protection of that, sure, yeah, there were things that came quicker and easier, but make no mistake about it, my life was no more happier or plentiful. They always kept me within this very narrow lane of control and being at any moment possible the inner throes of destitution, because that was part of the control of that. You know, like, step out of line for 1 minute and you won't be able to eat.
Right.
Or, yeah. So, no, it's not like I was rolling in cash or cars or bitches or anything. No.
It's like
a
Sea Org. You're, like, living like a Scientology Sea Org member.
Yeah, that's basically, yes, thank you, that's a good analogy, yeah, that's how they were keeping me, yes. The year I worked for the Scottish Rite, they were paying me jack shit, total jack shit, and I remember summer came along, and the AC went out on my car in Dallas in the summer, and they would not even give me enough money, which I think was going to be like $600 to fix what was wrong with the car so that I had AC in it. They wouldn't even do that. And I can tell you they had a lot of money. So that was extremely sick. And yeah, that's how they are. So at least, I would say that my life is actually better in that regard, because I may still, like, not be able to afford anything, but at least I'm not their little beta cuck bitch boy every day of my life like I was then. I'm my own person, making my own decisions, free of the constraints of them and their crap, and therefore my life is better this way. Absolutely.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Do you think that it, like, what if you, instead of, you know, starting at Dallas, if you started in New York City and tried to be a Wall Street broker, do you think the Masons would have helped you done that?
Well, that can never be. I'm not good with math I'd be like some brain surgeon before I'd be damn Wall Street broker.
Yeah, but no. So a lot of, okay, well, let me pitch it to you this way. There's companies, all right? A lot of brands, a lot of companies, okay? Are they going to, is the stock price going to go up? Is the stock price going to go down? You know? Oh, an article came out that says that the General Motors just came out with a new Ford Taurus. And then you go, ooh, I think that's going to make the stock go way up, you know? Could just be like using your dragon magic precognition powers to, you know, pick the winners.
Well, okay, well, that's an interesting question. I have an interesting answer for you. Kind, sorta. What I mean is, yeah, I guess you could remote view or whatever, you know, get a precog vibe on, like, is this company going to make it? Are they going to do great things or whatever? But where you can't, and this is where they, to me, they're just stupid. They think that this type of stuff can be used to play with money, numbers of money. Okay. You're talking about something, an energy, whatever you want to call it, that does not know what the hell money is, because money is a disgusting little artificial construct of mankind here on Earth. It's not anything that has any bearing or significance or recognition in a cosmic sense. So you're dealing with a power that is derived from a cosmic place, so you can use it in terms of, like, let's call it abundance, you know? Like if you pray, you can't pray for money, you know, but you could pray for abundance. But, you're sitting there and trying to plug one of us into the little matrix of, what price is the stock going to close? No, because the universe doesn't give a shit. That is so stupid.
Well, I can tell. Let me offer you this. You know, my dad used to work on Wall Street, and one thing that definitely took away when he told me is that he said a lot of the stock traders are really into astrology. They're really into numerology. They're really into, some secret society crafts. Certainly, astrology being one, where they try to pick the date that a stock is going to go up, so they can be the first one to place that order.
A lot of Hollywood operates off of astrology, too.
The release date? They pick the release date very carefully.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I have a love-hate relationship with astrology, because I think a lot of it is bullshit, you know, in the regard that people touting it or who are trying to sell it to you don't know what the hell they're talking about. If they really did, you know, you'd be seeing their clients get a lot better answers or results or whatever. Beware of those crystal salesmen, because a lot of them have no talent with that. They're just trying to make a dollar and sell you some snake oil and all of that. I've met some good ones, but beware of the Miss Cleos of the world, you know.
I think that these guys who are doing astrology and stock trading, they're trying to, like, find glitches in the matrix. They're trying to find little synchronicities. Oh, I made money that day. Ooh, it's almost like addicting if you make money due to looking at the astrological calendar, and then you start making that association. You start to be very, you're gambling, too, which is very addictive. And then if you start to associate your gambling on Wall Street with astrological charts, and then, you know, when you have a failure, you say, oh, well, I didn't understand. I didn't read care. I didn't study enough. And then when you have a success, you go, oh, I got that perfect, you know?
I don't know. Well, me personally, I don't believe in gambling. I'll walk into a casino, but I will only watch a show or eat from the buffet. I do not believe in this Wall Street gambling. It's so stupid. It's designed for you to lose. The only winner in a scenario of gambling is the house.
All right, James. I'll see you soon. Thanks for the interview.
Hi, man.
And the update.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Thanks for calling and giving a damn about how I'm doing.
Well, you're a good dude. You're a knight of the Templar, and secretly I think that one day we'll go in the woods and, you'll light something on fire and then a demon's going to show up, and I think that would be pretty cool. So, what I mean? Get some of that dragon magic going. Show me show me a spell, you know? I'll wear a robe or something, and I am squeamish, but I guess I could, like, cut my hand with some kind of Templar saber and pour it on a fire or something like that, you know? But I might pass out, but I'll try.
Well, all right. Let's mark that down on the calendar.
Maybe we could do that in Runyon Canyon and take some selfies.
Or Topanga Canyon and let the CIA people that live up there get a good show. Yeah.
We'll look like real Hollywood social climbing douchebags. We'll fit right in. All right, buddy. Well, thanks for the podcast. I got to talk to you later.
All right, take care.
There you have it. James Robert Wright of the Knights of Templar. You know, it's got interesting family drama. He was living with his cousin on meth, who claimed the other family was murdering. I went into detail with the FBI on the phone. You saw me going to, you know, now I got egg on my face. I called the FBI to report this murder. Turns out it was just the ramblings of a meth head who's had too much trust fund pussy. Boy, if you're getting $750 a, or $1,000 a month and you're from disability checks, then you're flipping hoes, man. Some of that I just got to respect. But anyway, I think he pulled a gun on James for some cereal. And, you know, that draws a line. I mean, it's one thing to live like a gangster, and it's another thing to pull a gun for some cereal. So, anyway, trying to give you guys the update on what's going on in James's life. That's another episode of the Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Take care.